Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers.
You're listening to Ballard Radio, and tonight, my name is Matt Weston, and tonight I'm joined by BFD, who will be, he's running a little bit late, he should be on here in about, 3 minutes or so. And so in the meantime tonight, we're going to talk about the NFL draft as listed. We'll focus mostly on the Houston Texans and what they did in this draft, and depending on the time that we have, we'll discuss the Jacksonville Jaguars and how very scary they may be. It may have become the Tennessee Titans and the way they kind of did a strange thing by trading back into the draft to take an offensive tackle. Again, using a high pick on a running back, even though they spent all that money to trade for DeMarco Murray. The Colts as well, too, who used four of their picks on offensive linemen, two in the four rounds on offensive linemen, one on defensive linemen, how they're trying to get bigger, up front as well, too. And then we'll also talk about things like the whole defensive end, what grade we would give the offseason so far. I feel like the direction that this team has gone, because this is the third offseason in a row that we've seen Bill O'Brien as the head coach of the Houston Texans. And then we'll talk about the draft. We'll talk about Fuller, the speed that they brought in, if there was any other guys that we possibly could have wanted, what out there that might have actually been available too. And so BFD should be on here in a second now, and I'll probably have to edit some of the stuff out because I'm all by myself right now and alone, scared. But anyways, the kind of biggest phrase that occurred whenever this draft happened was that the Texans are now a very fast football team. And that was thrown around by everybody on the site, the pundits you see on the television, the writers out there, anybody giving any sort of mock draft grades at all. That was one thing they made sure to know, was that the Texans are going to be a much faster football team. I know Fuller ran a 4.38. Urban's really fast, especially when you watch him on film against that lesser big conference talent. I mean, he was the fastest guy on the field every single time he stepped on it, whenever he was playing, teams like New Mexico State. And then with Braxton Miller, I mean, I can't remember exactly what he ran, but you get another guy who's extremely, I guess, agile and quick and elusiveness. And I mean, he's still doing that spin move that he did against Virginia Tech. And so that's kind of the main phrase regarding this draft after it occurred. And so, BFD, did you know that the Texans are a very fast football team now?
They are now. They went from, like, me, fat, and drunk fast to, a.k.a. Alfred Blue fast.
That's what I was about to say.
Like, yeah, it's about the same. We have some really fast guys who play the foosball.
Yeah, and as I was alluding to, it all kind of starts with Will Fuller. It was the wide receiver of Notre Dame taking on the top. And so, do you think he's going to be a good football player?
I have to admit that I'm not a big fan of that pick for several reasons. We've gone into it in the past. One thing that I thought is funny in a dead clown sort of way is that, I did a poll, I think the Wednesday before the draft, and I think 90% of BRB said no to Will Fuller. And not only no, but it was like, no way. After the draft, after we take Will Fuller, approximately 140% of Battle Red Blog approves of the Will Fuller draft pick. So I just think it's funny how that's kind of flipped since before and after. And it's not really surprising, it's the drinking the Kool-Aid thing, right? But I still think it's just been kind of funny. I won't go into why I don't like Fuller that much. It's been discussed pretty ad nauseum. I still wish that we would have gone defense with that first pick. And I'll tell you, that looking at who we took the rest of the draft, if we had taken Vernon Butler or a top-rated defensive end, and all of a sudden that defense goes from two gaping holes, one at safety and one at defensive end, and fixes a huge problem at one of those two positions, and then you look at who we drafted the rest of the way, oh boy, I mean, even I would be on the 12-4 bandwagon. I think that that one decision hurt. I still think that we have some holes that can be exploited on the defense, and having a Nothenberger at defensive end is going to help. But even if you don't really like the Will Fuller pick like I do, you look at picks two through the rest of the draft, and even with the trade-ups and that sort of thing, that's a pretty fantastic draft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, my thoughts on Fuller, I guess, is that, you know, he's very fast. He runs a lot of different routes. It's not a case of a guy who's going to be limited by any means whenever he comes into Houston. You know, he ran a lot of slot rounds, ran a lot of screens, you know, really stretched the field deep on post, and he runs a really good corner route too, which is like the best route Teddy Bridgewater throws, which that's what I think of every time. And every time we get to mention his name, we have to as well. It's really become a cultural staple of, you know, our time here at BRB, or the last 3 years. But I think the biggest problem with Fuller, though, is just how he catches the football. And you can look at drop rates and say, hey, you know, he was only 3% worse than Coleman, and Coleman was 15. Everybody wanted Coleman. But it's not necessarily that he dropped the football. It's just the way he catches it. Everything comes into his chest. He claps the ball. He has to double catch. Whenever it's a deep pass, he passively waits for it to come into his body. He doesn't high point the ball. He doesn't come after and attack it. And in the NFL, you know, he's gonna be just as fast and a little bit faster than a lot of cornerbacks in the NFL. But the difference between that and the college game is huge. And so you see him make all these catches on slants and, you know, deep passes and stuff where he has all day to wait for the ball. That doesn't occur at all in the NFL. In the NFL, he's going to get hit right whenever that ball hits his hands. And so if he's clasping the ball, if it's coming into his chest, if he's having a double catch, he's not going to get those are going to be incompletions or even balls that pop up for interceptions. And then if he's waiting for these deep passes, the safety's going to come over and knock the ball away. He's going to have to learn how to actually go out there and get it. And, I mean, if he can do that, I think he's going to be a great football player and worth a pick. But I liken it to, you know, college quarterback accuracy. You can't name any quarterbacks that are bad accuracy in college you develop in the pros. You know, there's a lot more E.J. Manuels and Jake Lockers and Christian Ponders of the world than, I mean, I can't even name one. And you kind of see the same thing in the NFL. We have these really fast guys, but whenever they can't catch the football well, it's not like something like kind of clicks. And I think it's just you have a lot of guys who are really good athletes, but not necessarily, you know, good ball players. And I'm afraid Fuller may be that sort of guy.
Yeah, and that's, you know, obviously that's one of the concerns is what can be improved at the next level with him. It was, you know, we talked a lot about it on our listserv, the BRB admin listserv that we have, that, you know, it's not like we don't like him for the tree routes, even though I have a somewhat of a problem. And granted, he caught passes from 22 different routes as a college athlete, so, you know, that's he does have some skills there. But the biggest problem is you don't see, number one, guys with that sort of build who are very successful. We're going to talk about build quite a bit, I think, tonight, too. Because even when guys like Steve Smith came out of college, and because you're talking about the Smurf-type receivers, right? Steve Smith was a brick house coming out of college.
Yeah.
Will Fuller is not. I think that in football, there's a lot of that goes around the build of the athlete as well. And Will Fuller is not a big athlete. And in fact, I'll just say it. Is that, you know, my wife saw a picture of Will Fuller's legs and said, "You have bigger legs than he does," and that's like,
hell,
wow,
yeah.
you know, and I'm 45 years old, so that's something. He doesn't carry the muscle very well, and that's worrisome when you look at it from that perspective. Now, then once again, you talk about the differences in college. Nobody could hit him. Nobody could catch him. And the pros, people are going to catch him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's going to get hit, and so how he's going to take up. So you don't see guys like Steve Smith. The slight wide receivers that are 5'10 and smaller who are successful at the next level is a very small, small group of people. That is the outlier. That is the exception. That's not the rule.
Yeah, and I mean, Fuller is 6'190", and so he's not a very big guy. And I think build's also important, especially weight. When you look at any of the, you know, playmaker models that Football Outsider does, or any type of really model at all, it's not necessarily how fast they run, but it's their size also. So, you know, 4.38 at 6 foot, 190 pounds necessarily isn't as impressive as 4.45 at 6'2", 210, you know, with that smaller size and smaller ability, he has to be faster to be, you know, really anything at all. So you said that you wish that Houston went defense to that position. Now, let's say, so you were one of the people who wanted, let's say, Treadwell or Dotson at 1.22. You wanted defense for sure?
I wanted defense for sure, and I think that's a lot of this is really how my worldview is coming into shape, which is the NFL today, the NFL is not a running, a pass rushing league. Okay, so once again, let's get rid of that. That is just complete fiction. The NFL is a passing league. It's going to continue to be a passing league. I can start to see a tipping point because now we've got linebackers who are 6'2", 210 being drafted just purely for their speed. So at some point in time, we're going to start seeing monster offensive lines and monster running games to combat that sort of strategy. We're not there yet. Still a passing league. There are two things important in football. Well, three. You need a quarterback who is an embarrassment. You need to keep your quarterback clean, and you need to keep to the other, you need to get to the other quarterback. Those are my three rules of football right now. And if you're not applying yourself to one of those rules or taking advantage of one of those rules, then I think you're making a mistake. That's why when I look at Will Fuller, I see he is a toy, and I look at Vernon Butler and say that is somebody who helps us win games. So that's just that's a very personal, subjective perspective for me.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that too, and we'll talk about scheme a little bit, so I want to hold on to that thought. When we start talking about the kind of the other skilled players and how they may fall in within this offense too, because I think it's an important point about where they took him. So you wanted Butler there, him going to Carolina. What about like Ndamukong or Ogba from Oklahoma State, or did you want for sure like a big defensive lineman in the first round?
I wanted a defensive end, somebody who can play all three downs. Somebody who can also rush the passer. That's what I would have liked to have seen because we got into so much trouble last year playing 1-3-7s, 1-4-6s that we were just so small we were being overwhelmed. If the team didn't pass, we were just getting destroyed. And Gulliver, hold on, sorry, get down. That dog just jumped in the vegetable bed with my okra and chard. No. We got into so much trouble by being so small. We can't continue to do that. We can't continue to have J.J. Watt, our only guy on the field on third down, who weighs more than 240 pounds. So, you know, that to me is a big issue. It cost us the games. Atlanta really took advantage of that against us. Dolphins really took advantage of that. So I would have liked to have seen at least one more guy who can go out there on third down, get to the quarterback, but weigh more than 240.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did get better whenever they had enough started having enough faith in McKinney whenever he started understanding how to coverage. You know, for example, like that pass where they hit Freeman the flat, he went for like 56 yards against Houston. That was because McKinney and Cushing didn't know how to cover, how to communicate with each other on the nickel package. And they pretty much left that package after the game, used Eddie Pleasant, and they just got destroyed on runs out of the dime formation, out of shotguns. And then once McKinney started playing nickel, you know, even though he has problems covering, I think he can cover running backs okay. But once he started actually playing their nickel packages, the run game shored up. But again, you start seeing Eddie Pleasant in there too. And so I think maybe like that was the kind of thing that I was disappointed with, is that they never really got maybe like a tweener safety who's, you know, 230 and really fast who they could use just in nickel packages. And they have re-signed Eddie Pleasant. So I think that's kind of like a secret, you know, big hole heading into next season if they didn't fix it all.
Yeah, and that's what a question is. When you look at, okay, we took Braxton Miller, so why isn't a threesome group of Strong, Hopkins, and Braxton Miller good enough? You know, we have Lamar Miller now, too. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that's more than adequate team speed to really do a lot of damage offensively. That's a lot of playmakers right there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, that's just – is Will Fuller the pick? And we're being a bit nitpicky with that. I mean, he's gonna put up some big numbers for us. But it's just the history of guys of his size, his speed. It's just not a great historical perspective of success.
And I mean, it's and also just like how he catches the football, and it's very scary and, you know, worrisome to see a guy like that. Because I've even seen some like stuff on Twitter that drops aren't that important. But, again, it's not even necessarily the drops are important. You can't just send an offense and trust to give this guy a ball if you know, he's not going to bring the ball in. I mean, it took Tangin, you know, 7 years to learn how to do it. Even then, you know, he still dropped some, but it took him that long to become capable enough to, you know, earn any sort of playing time at all. But it's also just, like I said, how he catches the football is very important, too. Going back to Braxton Miller, did you like him heading into this draft, and do you think he's going to play most of the slot? Or, you know, whenever you close your eyes and you and think about this offense, where do you see Miller fitting in here?
I do see Miller as a slot guy. I really, really like the Braxton Miller pick. When we did our, what was our favorite and most hated picks post, I knew everybody, that Braxton Miller was going to get love from just about anybody. That's why I picked Nick Martin, because he's just going to be repetitive with Braxton Miller. See him as a slot guy. I really hope, you know, I keep seeing that he's going to be running back wide receiver. He's going to be our wild bull quarterback. No, just look, give him the wide receiver playbook. Say, dude, go learn this. Learn how to become a wide receiver. We'll do the other stuff in a couple of years. So look forward to that. But if you show me you can play wide receiver, you're going to have a heck of a career. And so I hope that's what we do with him. I also hope, all things considered, he doesn't return a single punt or kick this year. This is a guy who I look at him and I say, we've seen all these slot receivers, you know, the slot machine guys like Julian Edelman and Wes Welker and those type of guys with their small area of burst and quickness. And I look at Braxton Miller and go, holy cow, that is like an athletic version of Julian Edelman.
Mm-hmm.
I want him to have the ball in space. I want him to have the ball underneath. I want him on the trail routes. That's the guy who I want doing the damage for me. And mm-hmm. So I'm super Miller.
Yeah. Well, and don't forget, Edelman can't be athletic because he's wide. You know, I'm really glad you didn't break that rule.
I
like Miller. I mean, I think, you know, he only had, I think, 36 targets last year in Ohio State. I know he had shoulder surgery, or he had surgery on both of his labrums. That's why he stopped playing quarterback. And, I mean, he seems like a raw guy, but he's a really great athlete. And that's the thing about, like, the difference between, like, him and Fuller is that you're taking him in the third round, wherever you're trying to find these guys who – or maybe kind of mercury, not as sure things, but the athleticism is there. And, like, you watch his highlights, you go back and watch some of his film, and, I mean, he makes some great catches. He gets separation pretty well whenever he's actually on the field, and he actually knows how to catch the football. Like, if you watch him catch the football compared to Fuller, it's two completely different things. Like, Miller looks like an actual natural wide receiver there. And so I think there's, you know, there's a lot of different things that you can do with him. I see him playing in the slot a lot, too. I also think that depending on how he does in training camp, may deem the end of Cecil Shorts in Houston, unless they want to keep Shorts as like a veteran wide receiver guy like he was in Jacksonville with Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson for those 2 years before they cut him, so he could maybe hang around and teach these guys how to be professional or whatever. But this is probably the end of Cecil Shorts, which is a sad day. But, I mean, I see him mostly playing the slot. I think there's just a lot of fun things you can do with him, rather it's just you're running quick slant routes, you know, hitting him up the seam, running into rounds and, you know, jet sweeps with screen passes. And then that was kind of what I was getting at earlier. We were talking about scheme too, where you have DeAndre Hopkins on the outside. They don't even really necessarily double team Hopkins a whole lot last year at all either. I've watched all those passes because of how they scheme the offense too, where they're just putting one-on-one situations on the outside, branching everybody to the other side and using route combinations to get those guys open and leaving him kind of over there by himself. And he just lined up all alone. And so I could still see Hopkins not worry about double teams, but what this is going to do, though, is Hopkins is going to open up everything else for the rest of the offense. It's like how Watt, somebody else doesn't open up things for Watt. Watt opens up things for everybody else. So they're going to double team, they're going to get triple team. They're still going to be very good because that's how good their talent is. And so that's what I was getting at with Fuller. It's that, you know, Fuller and Miller and even, you know, Lamar Miller too and Irvin, you know, you have four guys who are really fast, and if they're a lot of attention, and they're putting two guys over there, that's only, you know, five or six guys to cover these other four guys who are very fast and can do a lot of different things. And so do you like the idea of this offense on paper where you have Miller come out of the backfield, Irving coming out of the backfield, or even lying him out wide, throwing a lot of screens and short passes, he trying to hit Fuller deep every once in a while, and then you have DeAndre Hopkins there to pick up to keep picking up chains, to run his double moves, to just kind of be that security blanket? Do you like how this all kind of fits when you think of the geometry of it?
Kind of, and let me – I want to hammer home one point that you somewhat made. That is, you know, a lot of the argument for taking Will Fuller is that he's going to take safety coverage away, safety over-the-top coverage away from Hopkins.
Which I think
that he's going to take away the – Yeah. But you have to make the argument that Will Fuller is basically a decoy. So your first round pick was a decoy. So that's weird to me. As far as what we can do, yes. Yeah. So if you're going to look, I have vetched about this for, I don't know how long I've been doing podcasts for the Texans and writing about the Texans. I think this is my 10th year anniversary. That this is a team that overall lacks physical talent. We draft guys who are safe picks, who are low stealing guys. That's the Mumphreys, the Hilliards, those type of guys. So this draft is the exact opposite. All of a sudden, we've got a team of track stars that is going to go out and can do some serious damage. These are guys who can pop the lid at any moment in time. So, you know, it's a bit hypocritical to say Will Fuller is a bad pick because he's because of X. But you also have to like the potential that this brings to the team. You've got Brock can have guys underneath the bubble screens. Oh God, not more bubble screens. Yeah, right. Just like they always do. So guys who can run the screens, you have Hopkins on one side who of course is going to do a ton of damage. You have Braxton Miller. Hopefully he can start playing in year one. Cause I think that's a big question is whether or not he can actually play year one. Because he's got such a huge learning curve, but they are going to be, as a group, be able to do more damage. Every time you put the Mumphreys out on the field, I die a little bit. And I hate picking on him. Yeah, Nate Washington, and to a lesser extent, Cecil Shorts. These guys are guys who just really aren't going to do damage after catching the ball. Now, all of a sudden, we have an entire team full of people who can do damage after getting the ball. So, to me, that's pretty exciting. And I guess it was last night when I couldn't sleep. I played a little bit of Madden earlier, and I started thinking about, okay, what am I going to do as the Texans GM or as the Texans coach? I've got four guys who can do damage for me. I got Strong, on say like third and seven. You got Strong, Hopkins, Fuller, Miller. You know, if you want to go with Irvin, you want to go. I think Hunt's off the team at this point. But let's say Irvin, you got five guys. I mean, you can just do – you have just those five guys alone. I mean, how are you going to cover all five of them? You line them up not empty backfield stuff. Don't get me wrong, not the empty backfield crap. But you're going to line them up and just let them run streaks. Let three of them run streaks. Four of them run streaks. How are you going to cover all four of those guys? You're not. Three can't handle it. Cover two can't handle it. And a man sure as hell ain't going to handle it. So if you're a defense, you're going to have to start seriously thinking about, I'm going to have to play safety over the top, cover three just to protect my ass from getting burned deep. And then you use the underneath to get Braxton Miller the ball, D-hop the ball, Fuller the ball, and to let them do the damage and get the 10-yard, 12-yard gains against the cover three where you're going to have a little bit softer, gooier inside. So it's pretty exciting to think about.
Yeah, I assume that Houston's probably going to go against a lot of zone. I think Tim brought up a great point about this offense, and you were kind of talking about why didn't they take a tight end at all, and it seems like they're just not going to use a tight end. It seems like, you know, Fedora, Tim Griffin, and Lom will be used, you know, as a sixth offensive lineman, short yard situations, but they're just going to be used very sparingly, and so it seems like you're going to see a lot of one running back, four wide receiver sets, and more of a spread offense, just to try to get these guys, you know, the ball in space. But my question for you coming off of this is that, do you think this sort of like quick passing offense, trying to get the ball out quickly in space to these guys, making lots of, you know, short, accurate throws to lead receivers where ball placement's a key, do you think this type of offense is good for Brock Osweiler, or do you think it highlights his skills as a quarterback?
I think that you need to, again, I'll go back to my argument that I think Brock's arm strength and downfield accuracy are way overrated by a lot of people. He doesn't have fantastic arm strength. He does not have the ability to really place the ball. You know, who would be perfect for this type of offense, of course, is Teddy Bridgewater. But, yeah, right, with the short and midterm accuracy. I think those are things that Osweiler, though, he's not bad at. I think if you keep him from making too many decisions, you keep him from thinking too much, I think he can do a lot of damage. But I think the fact is that if we're running those sorts of sets, you know, we're going to go 0-1 set type thing, then he is going to be able to throw the ball into space. And I think that's going to help him. So it's going to look a lot like college spread offense at time, I think, where he's going to work, you know, guys are going to be, it's going to be a college spread offense. I mean, let's just face it. That's what it's going to look like. So think about it. And the danger with that is, of course, you're exposing the quarterback to hits. But as long as you have a hot route or two built into that, you can mitigate that risk.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll have to, you know, watch some more video and stuff and kind of really sit there and, you know, lay down and just stare at the clouds and try to compartmentalize a lot of this. Just because whenever you think of five guys as fast in the field at once, it just doesn't seem like there's a lot of space, and you have to think about how they're going to move and all that. So, you know, Bill O'Brien's a lot of his hands, and, you know, it seems like this was kind of, you know, his mold, his idea of what he wanted this offseason, and, you know, execute this plan. And are you excited to watch Bill O'Brien and what he can do with these five guys? And, you know, based on what he's done in the past by being versatile, do you think we're going to see, you know, really good results with this offense?
Is this where we start joking around about how 2014, this year we're going to get better? We're getting there. Okay, good. I won't blow a punchline then. You know, I would, but, you know, as we're going to talk about, he's kind of had these lightning motifs throughout drafts in the past, and I think the potential there is there. Again, it's you know, there's a reason also, too, that Al Davis, you know, went a long time without a Super Bowl, is because just drafting for speed isn't the only thing you do. I think ultimately the difference is, though, is we have an offensive line. I'm excited about the offensive line, even though we've got three new pieces and we got the defense. So can you take a risk with your offense, but you still have a bell cow type back in Lamar Miller? And I think the answer is yes. I think this, if you're going to take a risk, I think this is a dadgum good risk to take if you're Ricky Bobby.
Well, and I think what I like about this idea for Bill O'Brien, too, is that you're going to have exactly what you had in offense last year, but just better and more versatile on what you're going to be able to do. What I mean by that is you're going to have a better running back in Miller. You're still going to be able to run, you know, your two tight end sets if you want. You still have a good enough offensive line. I mean, I think I'm still kind of worried about Jeff Allen at times, but this offensive line should be good again, and you should be able to run the ball well. And there are also versatile players too. You know, Sufio, Newton, Brooks, Brown, Martin. Allen's more of a power guy, but all those guys can run zone. They can run power. They can pull. And so you're going to be able to do all that stuff you were able to do last year. But then this year, you also have the ability to actually run a screen pass and have it work. You're going to be able to actually get yards after the catch. You can throw a lot more quick passes. You have guys who can open, you know, instantly. You have wide receivers who can take advantage of DeAndre Hopkins, you know, being double attacking the middle of the field. And the entire middle of the field hasn't been used at all because they try to go these two tight end sets with two very bad tight ends. And so now there's a whole quadrant of the field being opened up too. So I'm very excited for that, how it can all fit together and the versatility and be able to game plan, you know, week to week for Houston. I read a really good question from Locke Dew, and he said, "We've never seen this many weapons with breakaway speed in a Texans uniform. If Oswald can be pre-List Frank Schaub, I think our offense catches up somewhat with our defense, and we can be a dangerous playoff team. What do you guys think?" So, BFD, what do you think?
No, I don't think he takes it nearly far enough. The city of Houston has never seen a team with this kind of athleticism offensively. I mean, the only thing I could really come up with, and this was somewhat of a stretch, was the Oilers during the Earl Campbell. You had Earl Campbell, Kenny Burrow, Billy White Shoes Johnson, and Kenny Barber at tight end. And, you know, Barber is a questionable, you know, physical talent to say the least. But that's about as close as I could come. You're coming up with a group of offensive players who show the sort of explosion and athleticism ever in a football uniform in Houston. It's just incredible. So that is pretty, that's pretty exciting. So I don't remember the question. I just had to make the point that it's just,
sorry. I can re-ask you real more. It's okay. So if Oswald can be pretty List Frank Schaub, I think our offense hedges up with our defense, and we can be a dangerous playoff team. What do you think?
Yeah, so defensively, we're still going to be – that. You know, my biggest problem is I think defensively, you know, I think it would have been good to take a step up from, like, being – I think we're the
10th
best by DVO – 8th best by DVOA last year. You know, I think the opportunity – that was a missed opportunity to move up to third or second, really. and to make it that much better, because you start, when you start making those kind of incremental moves from 8 to 4, 3 or 2, that's substantial. That's not small. I feel like that's a miss, and hopefully the offense can make up for that.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I think it's super exciting, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying that, you know, you look at the teams with great defenses who've won Super Bowls recently. You look at Seattle, who had a top 10 offense. You look at Denver, who had the worst quarterback in the NFL. The thing is that they weren't just really good defenses. They were the best defense in the league by like 8% in DVOA. And so if your offense isn't that good and you're going to contend, you have to have the best defense in the NFL. And so I think Houston kind of were kind of crossroads where they're like, well, we can draft a quarterback high. We can put all of our – and we put all of our jelly beans and tiddlywinks into the defensive side of the ball. So that means we're going to sign, you know, Malik Jackson. We're going to draft two defensive players, the first two picks. We're going to get another cornerback. We're going to get another safety. We're going to get another edge rusher to be able to rotate guys in and out. And we're going to go all in on defense, and we're going to try to build the best defense in the NFL and win games like that and then exasperate our style even more. Probably even get better on the line of scrimmage and sign Lamar Miller, and that's how you're going to build your team. And so instead of doing that, they decided to try to go the route of, well, we already have this top 10 defense as it is, even with the holes that we have at defensive end and safety. We're going to be at least top 10 again, unless we have some really bad turnover luck. So let's go ahead and try to make this offense a top 10 unit too, and be really good on both sides of the ball, and then be terrible in special teams no matter what. And so, I mean, I think it's a very good strategy. It's what's worked for most teams in the NFL. The only one team can have the best defense in the league. Only one team can have the best offense and the worst defense. And having the best offense is more important than having the best defense. But I understand what they've done, and I can't, you know, disagree with it. I do think, you know, going back to Locke Dew's question, is that Oswald is pre-listing Matt Schaub. I mean, this is a Super Bowl contending team. And like we talked about in our quarterback ranking thing, is there's a lot of revisionist history in Matt Schaub. Matt Schaub was a top 10 quarterback for 2 years, and he probably could have been longer than that if he didn't get injured. And then also just if the defense wasn't so bad, you're really forced to have to do a lot more than he should have. And so if Oswald is as good as Matt Schaub, pre-list Frank Matt Schaub, then there's no reason this team shouldn't be a Super Bowl contender for the next, you know, few years or so. And so I think that's, yeah, I think it's kind of like with Oswald, that's what you're talking about, is what you want to see out of him. You want to see him to be, you know, above average quarterback like Schaub and how he was, like Jay Cutler, like Matthew Stafford. That's a bare minimum that you need to get out of him for the amount of money you're paying him, and for Houston to make the leap from, you know, best team in a bad division to an actual contender.
Yeah, and we need Osweiler to be as average. I mean, but there have been two below-average quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls, basically, for all intents and purposes. Peyton was one. So that is kind of a threshold to get. If he's above average, then this is going to be a heck of a team. If he can be average, if he's the number 13th, 14th quarterback in the league by some sort of rating, QBR, whatever, then I think that we're going to be set up for success.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I say, going back to this whole speed thing and this main theme and main thesis thing for this offseason, you know, I talked about in the email that we have in our super secret club, was that this draft reminds me a lot of the 2014 draft, when every single, you know, talking face was just throwing the Texans for, they got big on the line of scrimmage. They're going to push guys around. I was thinking Football Outsiders has that post where they kind of grab all the draft grades and bring them all together and kind of come with a GPA. And the Texans have like a B-plus GPA, had like the, you know, third best draft that year, if you looked at everybody's mocks or what their grades. And so they were just – they're going to be big. They're going to be great. They're going to move guys. They got blue chippers in Suofio, Clowney, Lewis Nix. They got an underrated guy in C.J. Fedorowicz. Prosh is a good blocking back. They're going to move guys. And so they end up with just a bunch of crap. And, you know, Andre Howe may end up being the best player in that draft, which is just incredible when you think about it. But so this one, we're kind of seeing the same thing, except instead of, oh, they're getting a lot bigger, they're going to push guys around. They're really fast, and they're going to torch the field, and they're going to set everything on fire, and this is going to be incredible. It's going to be so much fun to watch, and they're going to be doing cake stands in the end zone, you know, 7 times a game. So do you agree with this, you know, similarities that I've drawn between 2014 and 2016?
Yeah, and I think when you throw in 2015, you can go, these are the guys who, these are football players. That was the, these are football players kind of draft to me, which
they have skills.
You know, yeah, that one just killed me dead. And that's, that's something. It's a thing, right? Is that they have had these little things. We're going to get big in 2014. And in 2015, it was, we're going to draft football players. And in 2016, it's, we're going to get really fast. So it's been really interesting to play, to see kind of fold out. I mean, I guess when you look at 2015, you know, Kevin Johnson, you know, kind of the first round pick always seems to be kind of the outlier to it. But then Benardrick McKinney, well, he's kind of the old school downhill thumper. Is he really built for, you know, 2015 football? I really like the guy, but that was, you know, one of the doubts coming out on him.
Yeah.
Jalen Strong, what does he really bring? Keith Mumphrey, you know, yeah, because getting 4-6 wide receivers is just really important in the fourth round, fifth round, whatever the hell it was. And then, of course, Hilliard in the sixth. You know, what a waste of a draft pick that was. And that, we do that real time, too. I mean, why are you drafting the plotter in the sixth? Well, because Alfred Blue's a plotter, too. So anyway. Because
he doesn't fumble.
Hopefully, yeah, right. He doesn't fumble. So let me stress that point that I forgot to make earlier. Fumbling, remember, is a huge deal for Ricky Bobby. And so if you don't think drops are going to be a huge deal for Ricky Bobby, you're completely mistaken.
Yeah.
That is going to be a big deal. That is a mistake. That is kind of like a fumble for him. So that is a big deal.
Yeah, and I was kind of thinking about, too, that you bring it up, this whole drops thing. And you think maybe they went all the way on these wide receivers this year because the drops were an issue. And so it kind of makes you think, you know, maybe Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett kind of dictated how they went about this draft process. Because they looked at their drop numbers like, this is ridiculous. We got to cut this out. I don't know how smart the Texans front office is, but maybe they, even though they didn't really realize that, yeah, if you hit a guy in the hands as he's running full speed and he's having reached down below his knees, that counts as a drop, but it necessarily, you know, is his fault because there's just awful ball placement. And so I think that all those drop stats are misleading because of that. But, you know, the Texans kind of draft strategies the last 3 years have kind of remind me of, like, you know, like an 18-year-old who, you know, 1 month he wants to become a DJ. Next month he's paintballing. The month after that, he's taking guitar lessons. The month after that, he's rock climbing. The month after that, he's working on his car in the garage. Like, he never, like, just – he tries all these things because he likes the idea of it rather than, you know, sticking with something because he just enjoys doing something. And so they've been kind of all over the place for 3 years. But the other kind of big pick that we haven't even talked about at all was they drafted Nick Martin in the second round, who is – you know, Zach Martin's brother, the excellent guard for the Dallas Cowboys. Were you all right with picking a center in the second round? And do you think he's going to start right away for this team?
Yeah, I know there's a little consternation that we traded something. The seventh round pick, did that go with him for that? I can't even remember now.
It was a sixth round pick for the Redskins. I think he might have been a fifth round pick for this one because they moved up, I think, four or five spots.
Yeah, look, I don't care. Okay, you're not going to often hit much in the sixth or seventh round, so I don't care. You got better luck, you know, just carpet bombing UDFA than you are in the sixth and seventh round. So trading up to get him isn't a big deal to me. What he does, it's a big deal, is he's built almost like his brother. The measurables are very, very close and similar. He has experience at D1. He has experience. What I really like, two things I like about watching him play, he keeps his butt down very well, and he gets the second level very well. And so those are two important things in our offense, right? I totally think he's going to start day one. I completely think he's going to be a better football player day one than Ben Jones has been the last couple of years. So when I look at that, he qualifies. He's one of those three things for me. He's a quarterback who isn't a dumbass.
Mm-hmm.
My quarterback clean. So he meets one of my three requirements for football players drafted early. So, yes, I love the pick. I think he's going to really help gel the offensive line along with the rest of the crew. We got three guys. That's scary. We got three new guys on the offensive line. Not a great concept to have. Has to happen every once in a while. But I really think you bring in Martin Allen that things are going to be a little bit smoother than I originally thought. And wait a minute, we're only bringing two guys?
Yeah, Newton. Two. Sophia is still there.
Two. Yeah, that's, oh, that's right. We needed to replace him. Oh, well.
Yeah, well, hopefully,
oh, and I saw Questenberry is really hoping to play this year. I did see a quote in the Comical today that Questenberry is very optimistic that he'll make the team this year.
Yeah, I mean, I assume he'd try to play. We talked about before, I'm not expecting anything from him. But, yeah, like, hopefully Martin and, you know, Jared Noon's still fairly young, and Sufia, hopefully they really get to anchor this offensive line for, you know, years and years to come. I still am kind of bummed about Sufia, but maybe he can get consistent this year and he's getting really strong and that sort of thing. I'll probably write, like, an actual long, you know, 3,000-word film piece on Martin. And some of the biggest things I saw from him is you talked about him protecting the quarterback. He gave up, I believe, zero sacks last year. I think he only gave up five quarterback hurries in the free Pro Football Focus draft guide we got, which just is just inundated with just a ton of information that doesn't mean thing at all. But you read some of these player pages and some their accounting stats are, you know, or you can get some stuff out of that. But you're watching him block and kind of his big issue is he doesn't move the first level very well, but he has good feet and he covers up guys. So if he's having to block a nose tackle consistently throughout the game, he can do that. But if you're needing him to really drive somebody on an ace block, then you're going to run into problems. The other thing I like about him, too, is he's pretty fluid against the second level. And also, whenever he gets to second level, he stays on his blocks. The biggest problem that this offensive line had last year was not pass protection or you're driving guys off the line of scrimmage. It was getting to the second level, hitting your block, and staying on it. I mean, just too often they were missing linebackers completely or punching and falling and or getting shed. And that turned a lot of, you know, potential 12-yard runs into, you know, 3-yard runs. And so I think Martin, the guy, can actually, you know, prove him there. So I like the Martin pick. And also I like taking interior linemen in the second round or so because you get the number one selection there. If you're taking a wide receiver or if you're taking a cornerback in the second round, you're taking the sixth cornerback at that point because so many of them have already come off the board. And so Marty, the second best center in this draft and somebody who should be able to be just as good as Ben Jones whenever he comes into the league. And again, with him, it's just going to be having to get stronger. And I think he should be a very good player for, you know, years to come.
Yeah, he's something I realize it's a center in the second round. I realize that's not really sexy, but this is the core. This is how you make a team. This is how you build a core for your team. And, you know, if it's a clean, what couldn't the Panthers do in the Super Bowl last year? They could not keep the quarterback clean. Cannot overstate how important that is.
Yeah. It was also against two just, like, out-of-this-world edge rushers as well. I mean, I still can't get over Von Miller in that Super Bowl. Like, I'll be driving to work or going for a walk or sitting in the toilet. You know, there's, like, moments of human life where you just get, you know, introspective. And I'll just laugh sometimes as I'm taking a crap thinking about how dominant Von Miller was in that Super Bowl. I mean, in the entire playoff run, he was just incredible. The other two guys Houston took were on the defense side of the ball, finally, you know, for you. And they drafted K.J. Dillon, a safety from West Virginia, and D.J. Reader, a nose tackle from Clemson. Do you know anything at all about Dillon? Is he be able to fill a hole at all? Do you think he's going to play in the box? You know, Quinn Demps is not a good football player, but what are your thoughts on Dillon? Does he have a chance maybe to be a starter this year?
Dillon is somebody who, to me, is I don't know if he even makes a 53-man roster. He misses a lot of tackles. He's not very good in coverage. I think you need somebody more than that to be a safety in the league. If you want to get excited about him, he's fast. He's got good short area bursts. So there are some things to really like about him as a football player, but what not to like about him is that he doesn't really have football player skill. So it kind of goes back. Speed is great. Guys who can play football, great too. And some, you know, if you're going to make a trade-off, here's what you can teach. You can teach tackling. You can't teach speed. So if you're going to make a gamble, I think you're making the gamble in the right direction.
Yeah, especially in that position. But I wish they took a guy I wish they kind of took a guy who could play that nickel linebacker role later in the draft, but they didn't. The other guy they took, too, is D.J. Reader, a nose tackle from Clemson. Did he quench any of your nose tackle lust that you've had since Vince Wilfork farted in your mouth last year?
Sorry, I was counting chickens, like literally counting chickens, making sure they're all in the back of the coop. No, not at all. And I don't know if that's really on him. I think the bigger thing is the guy's been through a lot, and I think there's reason to doubt his commitment to football. And I don't have any harsh for the dude because of that. He lost his father. He's very tight with his father. and that really affected him. And sometimes, you know, there, that thing, that happens. That's a thing. It's real. He's dealing with it as he can. So I don't begrudge him. He's got you know, some skills, and this chicken will not get back in the coop. Get back in the coop, you little dinosaur. No, not you two. Come on, get back. They love me. I come back here and they love me. They want my attention. It's funny. So I don't see him really satisfying the empty lust any degree. He's another guy, you know, there's a reason he was a late pick. That other teams didn't get him, that he was pick number 200 and whatever, is because, you know, he has issues as a football player. He does have some skills, and we can hope, you know, like you said, Andre Howell might be the best pick of that draft, and he was a seventh rounder, so there's hope.
Yeah, and Tom Savage could still potentially be a good quarterback as well. So they went safety and nose tackle on the inside of the ball. Were you fine with this? Were there any other late-round picks that you potentially wanted Houston to take, or were there any other positions you would rather have them fill rather than take the two guys that they did?
No, I did, and I was, everybody can LOL at me for this one, is that I was really gunning for Nick Fairburn with our last pick over, you know, we took Greeter. I really wanted Nick Fairburn. I'm like, you know what, screw it, just get me a kicker. You know, if we're going to talk about addressing crappy positions at this point in the draft, get me the kicker. And Fairburn, however you pronounce it, the guy I wanted. And hey, look who he signed as a UDFA. Whee!
Yeah, so let's take that into UDFA, because they are people too, and they're going to try very hard to play professional football. And some may make it as practice squad guys. Some may make the 53-man roster. And a lot of them probably never will become high school coaches or business managers or go play up in Canada or whatever. And Lawrence Person has a bunch of questions regarding the kicker. And I don't know if he's just trying to make me say a word I don't know how to say, but
that's what he's trying to do.
That's what he's doing. And he's done a very good job. And I'll give it a try. You ready? And then you can give it a try after I'm done. So they signed John Christian Ka'iminio La Uama Ke Ikio Kekumupa Fairburn as the UDFA kicker. And I guess there's some interesting information here regarding him. He was a Lou Groza Award winner and consensus first team All-American selection in 2015. Everything else I really can't answer all, because he's asking questions regarding a specific game. And I don't know a lot about college football, let alone college kickers. But, you know, BFD, do you think that they signed him just for the chance to compete against Nick Novak and the training camp this year?
No, I think he's more than an afterthought. And I'm mixing him up with Nick Novak. It's Ka'imi Fairbairn. No, I think he's more than just competition for Novak. I think he's a legitimate threat. He improved greatly as last year went. He's 70%, I believe, on touchbacks, 70% rate. So I think Nick Novak is what, -4. He's got a bigger leg. He's got a more accurate leg. This is somebody with serious upside. I would absolutely love for him to win the job, and so we don't ever have to see Nick Novak again. So I really hope and dream that they are very serious about giving him an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And I guess I also want to touch on another point too, with all the speed on defense. And one of the other things I kind of saw out there, this idea of some floating rounds, that the special teams are going to be a lot better with all this speed. And I don't think so at all, because when it comes down to it, both of the kickers on this roster are both very bad kickers. You know, Leckler was just dog shit last year. Novak wasn't good at all. And so your special – that's the most important part of special teams. It's like you can draft all these wide receivers, but if you don't have a quarterback who's any good, that's the most important part, you know, not necessarily your coverage units and that sort of thing. And so, no, I think the special teams are going to be bad again next year until they get better kickers. But whenever they sign all these UDFAs, did you like any of these guys that they signed? Is there anybody that you think has a real potential chance to make this roster? And that's also a question from Kate Betma also.
Yeah, because I saw the questions about Steven Anderson, the tight end.
Yeah.
It's, you know, again, there's a reason these guys are UDFAs. There really is. If you're a kicker, it's less of a reason. It's because somebody wants to draft a kicker, and, you know, you wind up with an ex-Brian Anger. So you know, and you can LOL at Tampa Bay all you want to about them taking Roberto Aguayo, but look, the dude is elite, and Tampa Bay probably lost two games because of their kicking game. You know, kickers are, like you said, people too, and they can make a difference. You don't want to overvalue them, but at the same time, when you have Shane Graham trying to do anything for you, or Connor Barth, as Tampa Bay did, you can be in a lot of hurt. And so it's important to do it, you know, to address that position. So Fairbairn, I think, as a UDFA, great pick. Anderson, look, anybody's going to compete with the rest of the tight ends we've got on the roster. You know, he's the skinniest kid at Fant Camp, as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, the rest of the guys, I don't know. There's the one dude we signed who runs the 4.19, you know, ridiculous 40.
That.
And it's like, okay, so what is he going to, you know, do you really expect him to make the roster? I mean, who's going to, what's your 53-man roster, and is he on it? And the answer is no. So, you know, it's going to be, it's tough for the UDFAs to make it. There's a reason. Hopefully you can get some of these guys on the practice squad if you like them that much. But, you know, there's a reason they're there.
Okay. And we had another question here that was good, too, and important to answer. And it was from K. Betma also. He was asking, I'm not taking a defensive end. Who do you think will take over for Crick? And UDFA or either Pagan or Pagan. I guess I don't know if how you would say, because I know Pagan is
Pagan.
The Giants center fielder, and I don't know if Pagan is the same thing in Alabama, but I guess you're saying it, so that's probably correct. Covington or Still, and also Brandon Dunn too could possibly play that role. So do you think they're just going to use all four of these different guys? Or there's just going to be a camp battle. Who do you think is going to play the majority of the spot defensive end right there?
So can I make this the point in the podcast where I say, look, if I'm Ricky Bobby and I have done what I've done this offseason, I've got this team, this is the point in the podcast where I'm going to say, I'm going to call New York every day, every hour for the rest of the offseason. I'm going to say a first and a third in 2017 for Muhammad Wilkerson. Get me Muhammad Wilkerson, first and third, first and third, every day, every hour. The automated emails, I don't care. Because that's what I really like to see. Because the other guys we're talking about, you know, Devon Still, he's a great story, but you know, he's a replacement level type football player. Christian Covington, he probably will flash better as a defensive end than what he was asked to do at nose tackle in place of Vince Wilfork. And that's another one. If you know, does Vince Wilfork actually show up to the team in something that resembles some sort of shape? I mean, it's, yes, he's a big man. I get it, Ricky Bobby. He's a big man not wearing a shirt and wearing overalls. That does not make him a football player. The guy was clearly gassed the first half of the season.
And he didn't practice at all, too.
He didn't practice at all. I mean, what were we paying him to do? So, you know, does he come to camp this year in shape? That makes a huge difference for us. That allows BC to kick out the defensive end. The answer is, I don't really know right now. I hope the answer is not on the team. But if we're talking about we're going to wait for people's scraps at 53-man cuts, then that's not a whole lot better either. So put me on the train. 2017, first and third, Muhammad Wilkerson. Get it done. Let's just say, look, we're in the position. We are truly at the crossroads to say, fuck it, let's do this. And
yeah, I mean,
that's why I would absolutely do that trade.
Yeah, and they are all in on going for it, you know, with this roster, how they have it set up, and the money they gave Osweiler, and even though it's only for 2 years. And then the other question that I think for me personally, regarding defensive end, I think Christian Covington's probably the starter there. And the thing about him, it's also his best spot probably is to be a nickel or dime pass rusher to get Vince Wilfork out of there and put him at the one technique and let him rush. And he was pretty good at that last year. And so I think of the four guys, of Still, of Brandon Dunn, of Pagan, of I don't even know. There's one other name in the stupid head of mine I can't think of. But I think of those four guys, Covington's probably the best bet. And so I guess answering Half Tribe's question, you know, he said that they did address defensive end. He liked some of the things he saw in college tape on Still. He was wondering, what do we see in him? And you just see a replacement level player. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess the last thing I I want to ask you about, because I know I wish they took a quarterback. I wish they took a guy like, instead of Irvin, I wish they took Dak Prescott in the fourth round. And again, it kind of goes back to what we talked about before the draft, where you're going to have Osweiler for 2 years. I think Tom Savage going to IR like he did last year had more than enough to say about how they felt about him as a quarterback, that they would rather redshirt him, not to even give up a roster spot on him, sit him out for the entire year than have him play at all, even if it's after 8 weeks in 2015. And I don't think he's going to be a good quarterback. And so, I really wish that they hedged their bets at the quarterback position, took a guy in the third round, fourth round, let him sit and learn for 2 years. And then if Osweiler doesn't work out, you maybe have a potential guy who can start in 2017, kind of like what you saw with Kirk Cousins in Washington. And so I think that's kind of the biggest miss that Houston had in this draft. Whenever we look back on maybe in 2 years, is that if Osweiler doesn't work out, which I think it's about a coin flip that he's going to be an average guy. He's not going to be more than that. And there's a 50% chance he's better. He's the actual, you know, Matthew Stafford sort of player that Houston needs. And if he's not that guy, then Houston, you know, Bill O'Brien will probably be fired, and they're going to look back on, you know, this time, and they're going to realize that we really should have took a quarterback this draft, and we should have developed somebody, and we should have hedged our bets, because you just have to lock down that quarterback position. And even though we think we did, that doesn't necessarily mean that we actually did until you see results on the field. And so I think that's the one thing that I'm, you know, most upset about after this draft, and I think that's the biggest miss that Houston had.
Yeah, when you look at their draft strategy in retrospect, I get why they didn't go quarterback. I mean, clearly, you know, that to me, there was a certain point where I just had to give and say, we're not going to do it. The other reason is because you don't want Osweiler, his first year, looking over his shoulder at somebody. And I think that's an important and big deal as well. I mean, just look at what's going on in New York with Ryan Fitzpatrick, or in Denver with Mark Sanchez. You know, they have these guys in back of them all of a sudden, so they're looking backwards instead of forwards, and I don't know if that's a good idea.
We
have
to be a man and play some good football, you know?
Yeah, Sam Bradford.
Yeah, you know? But, yeah, he's the worst. He's my least favorite player in the NFL by far. Now that Peyton Manning's retired.
Much. Right, yeah, pretty much.
He's just a real entitled spoiled millennial is what he is, you know?
Takes one to no one?
I don't know. The other question that we have here is from You Shall Not Pass, and he asked, do you think Akeem Hunt makes the team this year? And I guess this is in regards to Lamar Miller being on this team. They drafted Irvin, which is, you know, Lance Zierlein, I probably said that wrong, but his NFL draft comparable to Irvin was Akeem Hunt. So do you think he makes the team this year?
No, which makes me sad, because, I mean, look, Akeem Hunt killed two cornerbacks last year. How can you not like a player with that kind of skill set?
Darrelle Revis, too. He created a touchdown for DeAndre Hopkins with his head.
So, I do think if there was kind of one wasted pick, it was Tyler Irvin. If you think that he is the guy he's a better return man than Akeem Hunt is at the NFL level, that's one thing. I'm not sold that he can be. He certainly has numbers to back that up. But I think you can make an argument that Tyler Irvin's going to be a better return man than Akeem Hunt. So then I can say, okay, fine, I dig it. I'm good with that. It's going to be too bad because I'm a really big Akeem Hunt fan. I wish he would have gotten about 100 more carries than he did last year. But I don't think there's any way that Hunt makes the roster at this point in time.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking back on it, Hunt may be kind of like Case Keenum was in 2014 or 2013, where just the talent around him was so bad. They're like, oh, my gosh, someone actually can run fast. Somebody can actually break a tackle. Like how Case Keenum threw one pass for 30 yards, like he's the savior. He is the greatest quarterback I've ever seen, just because you've been, you know, living in just a cloud of noxious gas for, you know, so long. But I think Irvin, you know, he's really fast and he's kind of fun to watch, and they need a good kick return. I think it was also fun that article Brett had today where he took that transcript where Bill O'Brien just kind of pulled this position out of his butt, that he's giving me the edge in this offense.
The edge.
And that just reminds me of like high school football where they're just trying to come up with, you know, things to be smarter than what they were. All this is just a guy who's going to play running back or slot receiver. And say he tries to complicate it to, you know, transform something by calling him the edge, you know. I thought it was silly.
Well, I think especially silly are the Darren Sproles comparison. If you look at Darren Sproles and you look at Tyler Irvin, those guys aren't built alike. You know,
yeah,
Darren Sproles' lower body is like is incredible. I mean, he's like a mini Earl Campbell out there.
And he's also like a once in a, I wouldn't say generation, but he's like a once in a, I've never seen another player like Darren Sproles before, you know? So I don't know how you make a comparison to a guy. I don't know, he's small and fast is really all you're saying. But there's never been a player in the NFL like Darren Sproles at all. So I don't know. We have a little bit more time, and I guess I want to talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars, right on the tight ends, because, you know, they did some more tight end sort of stuff where they drafted more on the offensive line again, took another running back early, got Kevin Dodds, rushed the passer, and they got another defensive tackle. So they did some tight end stuff, and that team may be good in another year. I think that they're not going to be – they need skill players for Mariota to be able to do anything. And then the Colts took a bunch of offensive linemen. They took a safety, and they took a defensive tackle as well. But the Jaguars are, you know, the team of intrigue here in the AFC South, and me, you, and or you, Brett, and I, you know, make my second grade English teacher happy. We all agree that the Jaguars are the scary team in the AFC South who could, you know, supplant the Texans, and we were kind of worried in this draft. They had a really good draft, and guess who won all the report cards? The Jacksonville Jaguars. They took Jalen Ramsey in the first pick, which Brent was, you know, horrified about. Into Miles Jack in the second round, which is what I was horrified about, that, you know, Jaguars could create any sort of pass rush. That, you know, secondary is better than I thought it was on paper because they just had no pass rush at all. They could actually get to the quarterback that's going to make those guys a lot better. So they also took Miles Jack because of his frame's knee. They're going to get Dante Fowler Jr. back this year too. And they took Yannick Ngakoue, an outside linebacker, defensive tackle. Tyron Holmes, an outside linebacker. And their first five picks were all defense. They took Brandon Allen, a quarterback, and then Jonathan Woodard, a defensive end. So they pretty much went all defense to try to, you know, create something on that side of the ball because they feel like they have enough with Bortles and what they did on at the running back position. So did the Jaguars have this exact sort of draft that you were worried about, you know, last week?
They had an even more worrisome because who in the heck saw them getting Jalen Ramsey and Miles Jack? I mean, that's pretty sick.
Yeah, I thought someone was going to take him at the end of the first round, the Packers or something like that, but he just kept dropping.
So they have added a tremendous amount of athleticism and speed. Yannick, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name because too much respect for the poor dude. he is an edge rusher. He is their sub package guy to get to the quarterback. That was another piece that they were missing. So they did a really good job getting guys who fit their scheme. Even Sheldon Day, playing the undertech in their scheme, he's another guy who really fits their scheme very well. I don't know if he's really the answer there, but he's, you know, Jared Odrick's getting older, so he's a guy who can step in right away and take 500 snaps, 400 snaps, I guess, more realistically. So they really went out and found athletic talent across the board to help them do the things that help teams win, which is get to the quarterback and create damage. And Jalen Ramsey on the back end, you know, I don't know where they're going to play him, but, you know, they can line him up. He's a chess piece out there. And if they want to line him up one-on-one, if they want to line him up on an island, that's one option. If they want to line him up in safety, that's another option. Slot's another option. He's going to be their chess piece, and it's going to be very interesting to see how they utilize him.
Brian told him that even that nickel linebacker position too, we're talking about that, you know, kind of that Eddie Pleasant role. I can't think of it. There's better players out there. I haven't watched any film in a while, but you get to him playing that nickel linebacker position too and blitzing and covering tight ends down there. And I mean, yeah, you could just do a lot of different things with him. He's fun to watch. It's all right. Do you think it's possible for the Jags to have their first top 15 defense since 2010?
I think they have a legitimate shot at it because just think about what they've added. So, again, let's not focus on 2015. Let's focus on 2016. There's always the infatuation. Look how they were last year. Let's look at the talent they've added, either accidentally or whatever. They've added Dante Fowler, Miles Jack, may or may not play, Jalen Ramsey, Malik Jackson, Tayshaun Gibson, Prince Amakamura, and Yannick Ngakoue, I think is how you pronounce it, Ngakoue. That is a lot of talent. That is a considerable amount of talent. So they basically have upgraded starters and a sub-package guy from one year to the next. Mm-hmm. That's big. That's pretty important. Are they top 15 with that? Questionable. Are they going to be, definitely better? Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And also, Jason Albert's a good player, too. And Sean Derrick Marks, who had a really good 2014 season, got injured at the end of the year. And he showed flashes last year, but he should probably be another really good type of Pro Bowl sort of player also. And, Telvin Smith is really good. Post Lunsey's kind of a hack now, and he just gets a lot of tackles. And you look at that and say, oh, he's a good linebacker, but he's not that great.
He gets the pile tackles. He's the guy on top of the pile tackles.
Yeah, the whistle blows, and he helps on top. He helps on pop as much as he gets a chance to. But, it's a scary team, and I think it's all going – the Jaguar season, though, is pretty much – the way it's built is going to come down to Blake Bortles and can he not make four just really stupid fucking plays a game. Like, if he can just not do that, then they're going to be a good football team. If he does it once a game and maybe blows some games here and there, they should win, eight or nine games, because I think teams are going to beat up on the Titans too, and they also get to play the third-place team in the AFC also next year. It's a fairly easy schedule. So, I think that the Jags are really scary, and again, Andrew Luck is still Andrew Luck, too, but they had the exact sort of draft we were worried about. Like you said, it was even scarier than what we imagined with the fact they got Jack, too.
Yeah, and so, and if we're going to talk about the Jaguars, I'm not even going to bother talking about the Colts, because they're just they need some serious help. But the Titans, they trade down. And I know a lot of people really like their draft. Jack Conklin, so you used your eighth overall pick on Jack Conklin. You drafted a right tackle with your eighth overall pick. That is not a good allocation of resources. Kevin Dodd, the guy who screams bust, is their pick at number 33. Austin Johnson, not a fan. Derrick Henry, okay, great. You got a 1-2 combination with DeMarco Murray. Is that really what you needed? Did you really need a running back there?
Yeah.
I look at their draft, and I just kind of LOL that they had a real opportunity from a talent standpoint to improve that team. Instead, they took a bunch of guys who, A, they didn't really need, like Derrick Henry, and B, guys who, right tackle, a end who really is a stop-the-run-first kind of guy rather than a get-to-the-quarterback guy. You can't get to the quarterback? Screw him. Don't want him on my team. And that's Kevin Dodd. So, they had an opportunity. They screwed it up. I'm so, I get so much schadenfreude from how bad the Titans are managed and coached and run has a complete and total operation of failure that thank you for another year of that. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I found it strange that they traded back into the draft and gave a second-round pick next year when they had, two of them. That's a really big, building block to have. And I'm completely fine taking a right tackle they pick. I think so much is made of left tackles. Over the years, when really having two tackles is really important, more so than having a really great left tackle. And Taylor Luan, I think the pass protection is almost there for him, but it's just kind of him being better in the run game. So I was completely fine with the Conklin pick, and they said they had him rated higher than Tunsil, and we almost went the entire podcast without mentioning Laramie Tunsil at all. But I think that if they rate him higher, fine, right tackle. It's important to have two really good tackles. And also for them, too, that puts Patazi at right guard. Warmack's the worst player on the offensive line now, and they have Ben Jones at center. And so they may be able to do some things. I think that the Henry pick was probably the worst. And I saw mixed things about Todd. I know you said you don't like him. I know Brett says he doesn't like him. I know Stephen White wrote an article saying that he really liked both him and Shaq Lawson. And I saw some really cool gifs of some plays he made. So we'll see. I think they're kind of up in the air. The one thing I really understand was just training back up and getting up that second-round pick instead of doing what you're doing. And then also, like I mentioned earlier, they don't have anybody for Mariota to go the ball with. They have Dorial Green-Beckham, who's a deep threat. He's shown some signs of life. But other than that, they don't have any wide receivers. I guess they got the guy from Miami, and I can't remember his name very well right now. But he's good. He's a good player. And they have a good tight end, too. But I think they need another, one or two more receivers to attack the short part of the field, and somebody, or one guy to attack the short part of the field, and the other guy playing the outside too. And they didn't do that, so I think they're going to have a lot of trouble passing the ball because Mariota doesn't have enough. But I found their draft to be okay, and I think it's a real wild card one too. But
It really depends on – see, there's no way I draft a right tackle number 8. There's no way I draft a guy number 33 who can't get to the quarterback. There's no way I draft a guy number 42 who's a two-down guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm off the MT Lust bandwagon in a big way unless they can play all three downs. Because, look, why are you going to spend the number 42 pick, Austin Johnson, who is clearly just a run stuffer? Why are you going to take him – you're taking 500 snaps with your 42nd pick. That doesn't make a lick of sense to me. That is a poor use of your resources. Derrick Henry, you don't really need to, go about anymore. That's why I really look at this draft and say they had the ability to really change that roster in a marked way, in a way that Jacksonville did, and they didn't. They took the perfect Titans kind of guys who are good enough to be National Football League players, but at a poor level.
Mm-hmm. That's the 7-9 times in the past that they all think back and reminisce on. I read an article Rivers wrote, and he linked to and something that Mike Mularkey said. They're going to run a lot of exotic power, whatever that means.
Right.
But that was pretty funny. Whatever you say, Mike Mularkey. I do, and the other thing too that's kind of silly about it is like, why take Henry in the second round whenever he's pretty similar to DeMarco Murray? Why not take Dixon or Booker? Some guys who are a little bit faster and offer something different. And I think that's important with your running backs where you want to have your complementary pieces there. But the last thing we're going to talk about is that they also – the 2017 mock draft started, and the Texans are probably going to take – I'm just kidding. We're not going to talk about 2017 mock drafts. They're the stupidest thing ever, and people still click on them, and people read them, and the 2016 mock drafts are dumb enough. And I can't – it took one day. One day, and there's already 2017 mock drafts out that people are reading, and it's just unbelievable. And I don't understand why we can't just have, human moments where something happens and we can sit there and we can think about it and talk about it and enjoy it and try to think about how these players are going to fit in schemes and that sort of thing, instead of automatically thinking about the next thing in the next year and the next thing in the next year, and then you're dead, and then you never enjoy anything at all, and you waste your entire life. So 2017 or mock drafts are really stupid, and it just really just irritates me.
Well, just think about poor Dan, though. Dan spent the last, 5 months just doing nothing but the draft.
I think he gets paid to do that, right?
Yeah, well, that's what he gets paid to do.
Fine.
He's a scouting the draft guy, yeah.
He gets paid to do that. I don't care. If he was doing it for fun, that'd be different. He gets paid to do it. That's fine. Fuck him. He gets paid to make mock drafts. I could do it too, and they wouldn't be very. If you gave me a whole year to watch college stuff, I'm sure you could pull it off. But I can't believe just the sort. Pro Football Focus had them. That Brugler guy had one. I think Prisco had one. Everybody had one, and it was just unbelievable. And these things got retweeted, 70 times, and people were reading them and just throwing them down their dumb faces. And I hated it.
And anything by Dan Brugler is gonna be shit.
Yeah, enjoy your life. Enjoy what just happened. Don't start thinking about the next thing already. Enjoy what just happened. Turn the smartphone off and, smell the flowers and listen to the birds chirp and the sunset. That drives me crazy. Anyways, that's all we have for tonight. And thank you for everyone for listening. Thank you for everyone who asked questions. They're all very good questions. Even you, Lawrence Person, who I think I pronounced the name fairly okay.
You pronounced the name right. Woohoo!
I think call him a good Pearson this time. And if you have the show, go ahead and tell all your friends, rate, review on iTunes as well. I know the best way to get somebody to do thing is to do something that you or share something with them is to tell them in person, like Lawrence Person asked us this question. So you should do that if you like the show. We'll be back. I really don't know when the next time we're going to be back. I know there's really nothing on the schedule until summertime starts, but if we think of anything clever or funny, we probably should save that quarterback podcast for the middle of summer, but if we think of anything at all we can make a show out of, we will. And keep in touch with the side. We'll probably do some good film breakdowns and some more stat stuff about these guys they just signed and how this offense may all fit. I know Brett has some good things going on for that. But anyways, do you have anything else? Do you have anything you want to tell the people out there?
Yeah, so one of my hopeful things, and I'm slammed with work right now. Woohoo! Self-employed, so it's great. But I'm slammed with work, but I think I'm going to take a go at a 53-man roster sooner than later. I think that's going to be a fun little exercise.
Yeah, sounds like a good time. Yeah, it should be fun. But anyway, thanks for listening. I'm Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Battle Red Radio. Thank you for being on tonight, BFD. And I'll talk to you in about 2 weeks when I'm going to a concert that wasn't last Monday, but May 16th, not the 2nd, because I'm dumb. But I'll talk to you then, though, and have a good life until then.
You too. Thanks.
I thought it was pretty good.